Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to the best in paranormal. That is Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick. Kara.
Hello.
You have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So, according to an eyewitness report from earlier today, actually, another dog man was spotted on a Michigan Upper Peninsula highway. Quote, it ran on all fours and had a long body that was very muscular. I could see its teeth for a second, which were that of a wolf, but the face was half human and animal. It ran so amazingly fast, faster than any animal I've ever seen. Once it was past us, it disappeared. I never took my eyes off it once. It just vanished. The creature was spotted by a 41-year-old man and his daughter. A string of mysterious lights was reported in the sky over the Horsetooth Reservoir near the city of Fort Collins, Colorado. An eyewitness reported roughly 20 lights in the sky, moving slowly in a uniform straight line. This comes after several weeks of sightings of mysterious drones flying in formation across Colorado, emitting a low buzzing. No organization has claimed responsibility for this new sighting, or for the drones, but some believe it may have been related to the launch of SpaceX's new fleet of Starlink satellites around that time. But having not seen the phenomenon, a spokesperson for SpaceX could not confirm this theory. Finally, Bruce Solheim, professor of history at Citrus College in California, said in a recent interview that he believes universities and college campuses are unusually spiritually active, being transient locations where a number of people pass through. He said that when he was interviewing for a job at Kobe Sawyer College in New Hampshire, he was put up for the night and experienced a number of loud, unexplained movements and noises, and at one point, quote, woke up to the angry face of a woman wearing an austere black outfit. The next morning, he went downstairs and saw a portrait of the woman who visited him in the night. Personally, I believe this theory. Many colleges do have haunting stories, perhaps because they're an excellent place for very young people to die before their time, or for very old people to retire permanently, doing the routine work they've been doing for decades. But maybe these rumors are just because colleges also tend to have big, spooky, gothic buildings. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right, the Dogman sighting. You know, Dogman is one of those things that, like, I'm really into. But everything. So when you try to suspend disbelief of science, you know, you sort of get lost. Okay, so there's a lot of woods out there for Bigfoot and. Bigfoot is sure. On the same evolutionary chain and stuff like that, you know, but dog people really sort of takes it to another level of, I don't know.
Well, okay, let me ask you something. How do you feel about ghosts?
I feel good about ghosts. I think it's possible, you know, residual energies and all that. I find it possible, sure.
Well, so is it so unreasonable that maybe some of these ghosts aren't, strictly speaking, human, or at least take on a non-human appearance?
So you think they might be dog ghosts that imagine?
I think they, like I don't know if they're dog ghosts, but I think based on everything I've read about these sightings, I don't think dogmen are physical. There is essentially no physical evidence that they're, like, of their existence, but there are so many sightings, and there is, of hundreds and hundreds of sightings, one sighting of a dog man, like, interacting with a person physically that scratched him, but there were no marks. So, like, this most recent sighting, this creature was moving super quickly and then just vanished. That doesn't sound like a physical creature to me.
Yeah, to be fair to dogs, if I were to come back as a ghost and would be able to reimagine my own body, I don't think it'd look like this. So, like, my Chihuahua, when he comes back as a ghost, I can imagine that he imagines himself as a much larger, more impressive dog.
Exactly, yeah.
With qualities, because that's all he's ever known.
Not to mention, almost every, like, medium or paranormal investigator we've talked to about ghosts, we always ask them, are there ghosts of people who were never alive? And they say, oh, absolutely. If you remember when we talked to, Shelley Godfrey?
Yeah.
Elizabeth Godfrey, Shelley Godfrey is a character from Hemlock Grove, about this. We asked her, what do you think the Dogman sightings are? For our listeners, she's like the authority on Dogman and wolf people in the world. And what she said was basically that she thought they were skinwalkers, you know.
Right.
Not in so many words, but that's basically what she said, you know, the Native American stories of, you know, witches essentially taking on the form of, you know, animals by going into some sort of trance and manifesting their spirit physically in the real world sort of thing.
Yeah, I have to admit I'm a fan of that too, though. Yeah.
Well, I'd like it if that was the case, because that's awesome.
You know, I think I was falling a little victim to putting it too much in Camp A or Camp B, but you're right. There's a lot of Camp A/B camp.
Camp AB, like a blood type. I would be very leery about attending a Camp AB. I mean, like, are they going to drain my blood? Is this place run by vampires? What's happening here?
I don't think you'd be that weary. I think you'd be all on board.
I would be a camp counselor, to be honest.
So the lights from the drones, as soon as you said that it had to do with the drones, this was the story that I thought would get a lot more attention in the world.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to.
It is pretty strange. But, you know, even after all the Tic Tac UFO stuff, even after the Washington Post story, mainstream outlets are pretty leery of mentioning UFO sightings in anything more than passing, you know.
Yeah, but outside of that, I mean, there's definitely a security, government, technology aspect to this that's even just outside of UFOs. So I kind of thought both sides would pick it up. But maybe the
UFO... That's a good point, yeah.
You know, maybe the UFO side contaminated the privacy side, so they're not willing to touch it.
Right. So, yeah, I reported on the drone thing, I don't know, about a month ago, I think. And, like, that is pretty crazy. People are seeing these low-flying things flying in formation, which, by the way, it's hard to do with drones. You know, a usual amateur drone operator would not be able to get a bunch of drones flying in formation.
Right.
And they've been spotted all over Colorado, and no one has claimed responsibility. You know, no... You'd think it would be a simple matter for some company to be like, yes, we're testing this proprietary drone swarm technology. And even if they don't say that publicly, they could say that to, like, the government and be like, there's nothing to worry about. We're just testing this thing. Right. And then the government could be like, there's nothing to worry about. But instead, what you get is the government being like, we have no idea what's behind this. Everyone panic, you know. It's so mystifying as to why it's being handled in the way it's being handled if these are indeed, like, just simple drones.
I think the government likes us to worry now. I think... I think they figure it keeps us distracted, not necessarily from the evil things, but even let's pretend the government is totally benevolent and even there, they would...
That's a fun thought experiment.
Distracted a little bit in order to ease us through the changes, allow us to be distracted by the things that we're used to being scared of as the world changes into a new world, which it is quite drastically. You know, so it's like there's multiple arguments for the government to say, let them worry about the crap they're used to worrying about.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from on that one.
All right. Well, coming up next, we have an interview with Greg Bishop about his UFO research. He's a UFO author and researcher, host of his own paranormal show. Greg Bishop is coming up next. Stick around. You're listening to Radio Wasteland.
Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/radiowasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Greg Bishop. Greg Bishop has been a researching and writing about strange phenomena for over 25 years and currently hosts the Sunday night program Radio Mysterioso. Greg, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. It's not even on Sunday nights anymore because I just do shows when I feel like it, which means I haven't done a live show in so long.
But, yeah. Well, that's the nature of the podcast, you know?
Yeah, it's keeping up for one person every week. After a while, it's just like, I don't need to do this. I have no sponsors. I'm not on any network, anything like that. I can just do it when I feel like it. So, yeah, that's Radio Mysterioso, if people want to listen to it. RadioMysterioiso. Like Spanish, Mysterioso.
And I think Netflix blazed trails with this because now they just sort of release shows whenever they feel like it. So The world's ready for that. The world's ready for it.
Yeah. On-demand podcast, on-demand everything. That's fine.
So, anybody who listens to us on a regular basis knows that I'm really sort of infatuated with early Richard C. Hoagland when he's going off about the moon and all the weird stuff going on the moon. So this square craters on the moon from your book, It Defies Language. I'm really interested in this. Are there square craters on the moon?
I'm not sure. You know what that was of one of the co-editors of Excluded Middle, which is what the magazine that was published in was called. And you actually, it's in there's an anthology called Wake Up down there, which has, I think, the full article in it. A friend of mine, the co-editor, was at a party. There was a NASA scientist there. And the NASA scientist found out that he was into weird stuff. And he just said, do you know that there's square craters on the moon? And my friend said, huh? What? He said, yeah, I was looking at satellite imagery from the North Pole of the moon. And there's things there that, you know, they look like depressions, but they also look like they have right angles on them. Like there's big holes with walls or something. He says, I don't know. I'm just going to call them square craters because I don't want to say, you know, really exactly what they could be, you know, just to be nonspecific and not have to put it in a category until we find out what it is. But what he found and what I published, and I don't know if you can even see these anymore. They might have been taken off NASA website or I don't know, but somewhere right near the north pole of the moon, there's three or four square structure-looking things. Now, these might be natural. Who knows? But I think the guy said he didn't see them anywhere else on the moon, just near the north pole. And I think there's three of them, and he did something with the angles to show that they were 90 degrees or very close to 90 degrees. And one of them was perfectly square. One of them was like, you know, three quarters of a square, and the other one was just, but Did I put an illustration in the book or did I not? Okay, because probably if you Google it, it's going to be somewhere because the images got out. I mean, they may still be on the NASA website. You know, if you can look at all images of the moon, mapping images of the moon from the moon mapping missions, I don't know. But yeah, he was looking at imagery from the 1960s when they sent satellites. I'm sorry, they sent probes out to the moon to take pictures of it to scout landing sites for Apollo. So who knows what's going on there? They look quite square to me, and I don't know what the origin of them is. The most crazy thing you could say was, you know, an Arthur C. Clarke 2001 scenario where they were left there for people to find later, you know?
You're obviously a UFO researcher down here, but, you know, is there any other connection? Do we have any other and to make those connections?
Not that I know of, except for, you know, many astronauts saying they've seen stuff while they're in space, and I wouldn't disbelieve them. I don't know what that stuff is. I don't even know if it's artificial. It might be. But according to some of the astronauts, actually a lot of them, they saw things around orbiting Earth and on the way to the moon and maybe even on the moon, but I think that's really iffy. I've never heard anything really specific about that, but there have been transmissions where you can actually hear them saying, what the hell is that thing? You know, kind of thing. And then they've talked about it, a few of them. Right. I think that's possibly, I don't know exactly why Edgar Mitchell started the Noetic Sciences Institute. I don't know if it's because he saw something was he was in space. It's probably he did. I don't remember the exact facts behind that, but a lot of them were affected by, you know, what they saw when they were on space flights. Now, as far as artifacts on the moon and and structures and all that. The only thing I've ever heard of has been those square craters. And who knows what those are? There's things on Earth that look very artificial, but they are natural. So it may be what's called pareidolia, which is where you're trying to make something out of, you know, your mind is trying to make something out of something that's natural or not even, not random, but apparently looks artificial, and you think it's artificial, but it's not. So I don't know. I mean, I don't speculate too hard on stuff unless there's really, really, really a lot of evidence that convinces me. I think there's UFOs, and I think people see them, and I think they really are things that people see. And I think there's an intelligence that's not us that communicates with us occasionally. Now, past that, I don't know what to speculate about.
Yeah, I think it's weird how they seem so quick to dismiss it as being natural when they don't know. It's like weird that we have these photos, we look from a distance, and we are so confident at what we're seeing.
Well, you know, my method, I think, is just leave my mind open and my opinion open for as long as possible until there's just so much evidence that something is explained or mundane or whatever. And there's a lot of stuff in my mind that has not been decided yet. And one of it is the square crater things. I don't know what they are. Nobody's ever taken a really clear picture or close-up one that I've seen. And certainly, as far as we know, nobody's actually gone there in person to look. So who knows? My mind is open on that right now. I think there's, you know, I've seen the imagery. I don't think it was fake. And it's curious, just like a lot of the stuff on Mars is curious. I don't know if it's conclusive about anything, but it looks, a lot of it looks quite artificial. So I don't know what to make out of it. Like the face on Mars, either that's a natural formation, which I'm kind of sort of leaning towards, or it's something that's artificial that's just so weathered that it, you know, you just can't tell anymore. But there's other things, you know, like those five-sided things and stuff that really doesn't look natural that, who knows, maybe they're, you know, 4 or 5 billion year old civilization that's gone, that was, you know, wiped out by whatever, climate change or wars or whatever. I don't know. I will speculate, but I don't know for sure. Like I said, that I have a very large gray basket, extremely huge gray basket about this stuff.
Well, that's probably the best way to look at it. You know, I definitely come at this stuff like a healthy skeptic. You know, I didn't come into any of this stuff from my own experiences. I came into it as a fan of the fiction, which led me to the questions like, could there be something else there? So I'm definitely coming from a skeptical angle. But I like collecting the stories, and as the stories build up in my head from more and more people, it makes me think all the more, like, well, maybe we should give it a closer look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you should, and people should look at the stuff themselves. They should talk to people, and you know, keep the question open for as long as possible, and don't, you know, for or against. I mean, there's people that, I think the people that are absolutely convinced of whatever, square craters or artificial, are just, to me, just as making as big a mistake as the people that say there's nothing to it.
Yeah, proving a negative without being able to go out there and actually take a look. All right, yeah. You're listening to Big Bishop here on Radio Wasteland. Come on back, we got more to talk.
And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Greg Bishop. Greg, before the break, we were talking about square craters on the moon and really what's going on there. But here, I was hoping that we could talk about, you had talked about an issue where in the 90s, you were approached by people claiming to be naval intelligence after a set of mysterious incidents. Can you elaborate for me?
I don't know what mysterious incidents that refers to. Maybe I said something about it, but I can't remember what the mysterious incidents were. But what happened was a friend of mine was contacted by somebody who said it was from naval intelligence, and that after a while he said, would you like to meet him? I said, of course, you know. So we met with the guy. he did things like show us pictures that he said were from Area 51 of strange, like, you know, craft that were captured or whatever. You know, kind of some, most of them kind of blurry, and some of them a little more distinct, but I suppose could have been photoshopped at the time or whatever. Some of them looked real. I don't know.
Were any of the pictures that you were familiar with, maybe having seen before?
No, not a one, which was kind of interesting. Yeah. I hadn't seen any of them. So I think he knew that, or whoever he was working with knew that. So they wanted to, you know. So what you find out with these people is that they will flatter your ego by saying, you're special. We're going to tell you this thing. It is a secret, but we think you need to know. And then they can lay anything on you if you believe them, because then you're like, well, I must be important, so they're giving me the real stuff. And then at that point, they can give you anything. Mixed with real stuff, so it doesn't look sound like total BS. But he would do things like, he would tell my friend, and this was the mid-90s, or the early 90s, when this was just revealed, when the stealth fighter was revealed. He would tell him, go to this airport at this time and stand at this runway. And he'd do it, and the stealth fighter would fly over. And it wasn't even, it was barely publicly revealed at that point. So, and he'd tell us, you know, watch the news, and this was during the Kosovo conflict. He said, in 1 week, you will hear that this person was shot down, and he was like, and it would happen. So he had access to information. But the thing was, he used that to pile a whole bunch of other stuff on us, like, you know, political stuff, mixed with UFO stuff, mixed with, I don't know what else, but it mostly had to do with UFO information. And I got, after a while of talking to this guy, I got horribly paranoid. I thought somebody was, he told me people could watch what I was doing in my computer, and they could look into my house and all this other stuff. And I got viciously paranoid for about a year until I made a decision to stop being paranoid because I was tired of it. But I learned a lot, you know, from talking to this guy, and I've had hours of conversations with him about basically about the UFO subject, and it's stuff that most people talk about now, about Area 51 and about, you know, the what's going on there, the who's involved there, what companies were involved there, what defense companies were involved in the subject. Stuff that a lot of people talk about now, but back then nobody really knew it, or the rumors hadn't started. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. I think it's partially true, just like a lot of stuff he told me. But it was a really good education in when somebody from the government, or says they from the government, contacts you, you have to be really careful, because they're not contacting you because they think you're special. They think you're useful. If you see what I mean.
Yeah. So why you? You know, why?
Because I had a magazine, why would I listened to him, and I guess they thought I was ripe for whatever, because I did publish some of the stuff he told me in the magazine, because I thought it was interesting. I didn't, right. But I didn't publish. I published it with caveats, like, you know, this could be true, I'm not sure, and the guy yelled at me for it. He said, "Don't put equivocations on this," and I said, "But I haven't seen this for myself. I have to." And at that point, I think a lot of it died out because I wasn't doing what they asked me to do.
Exactly. So it's like they're maybe getting you to propagandize, or, you know, like, do you feel like they were trying to get you to distribute disinformation or to slowly distribute true information?
I don't know. Maybe both. I really don't know. But if somebody holds all the cards and you're just sitting at the table there, and occasionally they give you a hand, you really don't have any choice in what it is. You either have to play or not. And if you play, you kind of have to play by the rules. And if you don't play by the rules, they kick you out of the game. You know? And right. if you want to play, and you want to play by the rules, and it's not too restrictive, like they're not, you know, asking you to hide bodies or anything, not like that would happen, but, you know, as an example, as an extreme example, then, you know, that's why the title of the chapter that's in is called You Play the Game or You Get Nothing. And the same thing happened when I was working on Project Beta, the book about Paul Benowitz. I mean, I realized that I was involved in a game, and that I had to play by people's rules. That doesn't mean that I passed along disinformation. It just means that I had to be somewhere where I said I was going to be and talk to the person I said I was going to talk to and, you know, be willing to be. I probably had background checks on me. I have no idea. But as long as you can play the game without having to knowingly lie or distribute false information, I'm okay with playing that game. But I'm not going to tell other people's lies for them, at least not knowingly.
So, you know, this cloak and dagger kind of stuff is kind of like a stereotype of this whistleblower UFO stuff, but this stuff really goes on.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if it goes on so much anymore because the internet is a lot easier than having to use people. All you have to do is start throwing out stuff on the internet, and if it flatters their prejudices, they'll believe it. So you don't really need to use researchers anymore. Although I think, you know, some are maybe kind of used, but maybe they don't even know it.
Right.
And it's not, you know, I think it has a lot more to do with defense and secrets and black projects and intelligence and all that than it does with UFOs. I think the UFO subject is whoever in the government knows what's going on. They probably know what's going on, but they can't do anything about it. And if they can, we're never going to hear about that. But I think it's mostly the cover-up is they can't do anything about it, and the subject can be used for other purposes, like counterintelligence. For some people, that might be a naive view, but that's mine right now, and it has been for a while, based on the people I've talked to and the things I've seen and all that.
You know, I don't really disagree with any of that. One thing that I've been having a hard time wrapping my brain around is the Navy releasing this stuff and even admitting to it or even saying anything about it, especially saying publicly, yeah, that's real, but we don't know what it is. That seems like you're just trying to terrify the masses that you don't know what you're doing, you know. I find it all really kind of confusing.
I'm of a couple or three minds about that, and one of them is let's deal with this in a way that is more open so that we can you know, utilize some of the public resources for this. Two, they know exactly what's going on, but it's being used to, and this is one scenario, it's being used to scare people into bigger defense budget or whatever. And three, it's an intelligence operation where people are being told a certain thing to see how the rumors spread and how to, you know, how people feel about it, how they comment on it. I tell you, when people come on the internet and say, what do you people think about this? I'm like, to me, that seems just like an obvious person gathering information. Like, what's this person's opinion? What are they thinking? What are they saying? Just so that information can be logged somewhere and used at some point. Which is why when somebody asks my opinion, unless it's a friend of mine, if they ask my opinion anonymously on the internet, I don't give it to them. I would rather not. But yeah, a show like this where everybody's listening and the host uses their real name and all that, totally fine. I'll talk about anything. But
right,
yeah, I think people should be aware of that, just giving up too much opinion or personal information to people that who they don't know, even if they do use their real names or what sounds like a real name. So, you know, it should be like, I'll give you an example. Remember that font that came out that was supposedly Donald Trump's handwriting? Somebody found his own handwriting and made a whole font out of it and called it, you know, stupid person font or something like that. And a bunch of my friends were like, look at this. This is so cool. And I said, you think you should be downloading that? Do you know who downloads that? It's people that you know, people with your opinion about, you know, with a certain political opinion. So I don't know if I'd be downloading information that's specifically politically oriented onto my own computer.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely a weird day and age of the way that information is acquired.
Software, I mean, downloading software on your computer that, you know, agrees with your politics. I don't think it's
smart. Right. I think that's the weirdest part, is that everything we read is catered to what we like already. You know, it seems pretty stagnant, you know.
Yeah. Check out stuff that pisses you off once in a while, you know, that you wouldn't normally check out. I think it's healthy.
Well, I definitely do. All my friends think I'm weird because I'm a left leaner, but I listen to hours of conservative talk radio and they think it's weird. And for some reason, I really like it. I like getting the news from the other side. It makes me really kind of think about it. Yeah, I really kind of accidentally do that anyway.
Yeah, well, that's rare. I think more people should do that. I don't even do that as much as it sounds like you do. So.
Yeah, I didn't do it premeditatedly. I just look back and realize that I accidentally did it. All right, you're listening to Greg Bishop here on Radio Wasteland. Come on back, we got some more. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Greg Bishop. Greg, I wanted to ask you, you know, I ask everybody this. Everybody gets asked this 1,000 times. Ends up going in new and exciting directions. You know, how did you get pulled to this? I explained to you earlier that I really kind of came from this fiction level, that the fiction drew me in. And then I hit Art Bell, and I like going to sleep to it, and it was exciting. And I was kind of sucked in from there. You know, what drew you into this topic?
I have no idea. But I do know that when I was a kid, we'd go to the library every week. And for some reason, I went to the paranormal, UFO, Bigfoot, you know, crypto, ghosts section of the library. And I read every book in it from when I could first read up to, you know, when I went into Boy Scouts or something. We stopped going to the library so much.
You know, me too. I was all about those. When you said ghost stories, I was all about those anthology ghost stories, like when I was a teenager and stuff, you could pick up at book fairs and such.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just, you know, like, they're fascinating stories, but, you know, in the book, they're saying, these are all absolutely true. So you're like, oh my God, this is great stuff. You know, it's what could be better for kids, you know? So at least when I was at the time, and I find that now too, when I go speak to kids at schools, elementary and middle school kids. Anytime you tell them something that they're quote unquote not supposed to know, they're automatically very interested. And that's, you know, they should be. They should have a healthy, disrespectful curiosity about things. That's the only way you're going to ever get anywhere in advance and learn, is to have this healthy curiosity and this idea that what's being told to you is not the whole story. So I think that's, you know, where my interest came from, and it just developed from there. And then I stopped thinking about it when I was a teenager, because, you know, you get older and then you can drive and there's girls and beer and stuff. But then after I got out of college, I got into a horrible, you know, severe depression. And I read an article about it, and it just came all back into my life, and it actually kind of saved my life.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to have, you know, purpose. I think, you know, going back to what you were first starting to say, is I think there's something about being a weird kid, a kid that's drawn to the weird stuff. I think it keeps magic in your life a little longer. And then later in life, when you come to settle down, you know, you actually have something to care about. So I think it's really the weird kids of this world. I mean, look at the NASA and JPL employees that, you know, tout their love of Star Trek and Star Wars. You know, it's like,
you need to keep that, there's that light there. There's that, I go and speak to groups, and sometimes, you know, especially groups like MUFON and all that. And my, you know, my message sometimes, if I can get to it, or if I feel like saying it, is, whatever that thing is that's deep down in your soul that you really think that you want to do with the subject, go do that thing, because you could change everything with that attitude. Not, you know, like, you know, you can go out and talk to 100 more abductees and, you know, fill out the form and, you know, do the thing that you're supposed to do. Or you could say, wow, this is a lot weirder than I think it is, so let me take it in the direction I want to take it in and see what we can come up with. And that's what's needed, is people having a, once again, that healthy curiosity and disrespect for what somebody's telling them to think, or what they're telling people to ask, or whatever. And I think that's where the innovation comes from. It comes out, that's where it comes from in any field, but it's really needed in UFO study. And I think it's happening. It's definitely happening in a way that hasn't the entire time I've been interested in it, which is, it's a great thing. Some of it's crap and some of it's wonderful, but that's what's going to happen when things start changing.
You know, I think about that a lot with the UFO field and how it started out so abstract, of people collecting stories, most of the time secondhand, and then we move on to researchers who are getting them firsthand. And then, you know, part of that leaves open the imagination to really grasp concepts that would normally be ignored. But on the flip side of that, you know, the advantage of collecting the data, you know, like MUFON collects the data, going through the database and sort of seeing the similarities and experiences.
Yeah. And I think that the ones that aren't similar are probably a really good indication of what is going on. Just like the weird kid has the originality to pull things in a different direction. I think the weird stories, the ones that don't fit in with the others, might be a little bit closer to some sort of understanding of the subject than this, than just going through the whole thing. It's like, okay, here's another light in the sky, or somebody had somebody come in their bedroom or whatever. I mean, that's strange to begin with. But I think the phenomenon is so strange that if you try to pigeonhole it into something that, you know, into a category or categories, that does it a disservice. I've got a t-shirt that's with a UFO on it, and underneath it says, mimic the obliqueness of the subject. And that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, well, the real strange ones, like what you were saying earlier about military testing, you would think the stuff from here would be the consistent ones. So who knows? Maybe all the ones with the triangular shapes and all the similar ones are actually, you know, our own government, and all the high strangeness is the one that are really real.
Yeah, either that or... And I've got, you know, I've written an essay about it called The Co-Creation Hypothesis. I think that when you get to the point where you see weird stuff like this, your mind cannot handle the weirdness of it. So it starts putting it in a category. That's how our minds work. That's how evolution works. You got to put things in categories so that you can, you know, reproduce, get food, stay away from danger, all that stuff. And I think that when you're presented with something that's completely outside of your realm of experience, that your mind will throw it in a category just to be able to have you be able to handle it. And I think that's why some of these stories are similar. It's also a problem, like when a UFO researcher comes and talks to a witness, they're going to ask them a certain set of questions, and you know, there's going to be a certain expectation. They're a UFO researcher, I got to tell them that it's a UFO and it looked like this or whatever. And that, I think, subtly affects how the questioning and how the data is collected and all that, which is why I'm all for, you know, throwing a wrench in it and having weirdness guide you if you can. I mean, some people can, some people with a more creative or artistic mind can probably let the weirdness guide them, and they're good at it, and others are just probably better at data collection and analyzing that data. So, you know, it takes all kinds, and I think we need all kinds. We need right brains and left brains working on this.
Yeah, so do you think that there's a influence in the media sort of being all about all this space and alien stuff, you know, into not only how many people are involved in this, but into if we could mentally handle it when it happened to us, and would we be less apt to put it in a box, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're a product of our culture, our genetics, our upbringing, what our friends tell us, what happened, you know, what you ate for lunch, all this other stuff. That all goes into what happens when a sighting happens, I think. And people don't really think about that. It's a traumatic experience too. So there's, you know, there's a psychology of trauma in there where a witness will, you know, they're in shock. And so what can your mind handle? It's like, well, X-Files said it was this. Okay, then that's what it is. Bang, it goes in that box, and that's what you remember at that point. And that might not be what happened, but it's what your mind wants to have happen. So, you know, you're already a step or two or three away from the actual experience. I've talked to people, and they say, why do you say people make things up? I said, I never said that. I said that their mind, in an attempt to handle the situation, will grasp onto things that it knows, even if it's disturbing stuff, just because at least it's something that it knows. Even if it's a dream somebody had, whatever it is. So, you know, when people give us reports about what's going on, I don't know, you know, even if there's a camera there recording it, I think that whatever goes on in somebody's mind is much different than a camera would record. And in many ways, a camera can't record these things. It is the instrument that's recording this. These sightings are people, and that's the instrument we ought to concentrate on, and also know how that instrument works and what kind of errors or whatever you want to call it it's subject to.
All right, so you've been listening to Greg Bishop researching and writing about strange phenomena for 25 years and currently hosts When He Feels Like It, Radio Mysterioso. His book, It Defies Language, can be gotten on Amazon. Is there any place else we would like to direct them for that book?
Lulu.com or whatever. The printer, print on demand. I get more money if you go there, but... you know, it's not necessary. But if you want to do me a favor, go there. And if you go to Amazon, you can see, I just put in my name and like, you know, five other books will come up.
Absolutely. And be sure to leave a nice review. Greg, it's been great having you on the show. You have been listening to Radio Wasteland.